Good morning. Welcome to the September 23rd Ad Hoc Strategic Planning Committee meeting. Roll call, Winter.
Chair Carballo?
Here.
Vice Chair Perkins? Regent Arescada?
Here.
Regent Brooks?
Here.
Regent Carter?
Present.
Regent DeBrava?
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you, Winter. Before beginning, we take a moment to recognize that here in Nevada, we stand on the land of the Washishu, Washo, Numu, Northern Paiute, Nui, Western Shoshone, and Nuwu, Southern Paiute. We take a moment to recognize and honor their stewardship that continues into today. With this recognition, we state an intention to rightfully include their voice and respect them as the 27 sovereign tribal nations of Nevada. Next is public comment. Is there public comment in Reno?
No, there is not.
Thank you. Public comment in Elko?
No public comment in Elko.
Thank you. Public comment in Las Vegas? I see no public comment in Las Vegas. I will move on to Chair's report. Just a brief update before we get to the important agenda items. This is the second meeting of this committee with the initial meeting in January. As the committee may recall, listening sessions were completed in April. At some of the sessions that I attended, I received compliments on the committee's efforts to include all stakeholders in the system's strategic planning process. There was a lot of robust discussion at each of the sessions. Many thanks to everyone who participated, including community members, faculty and staff, and students of our Grade 8, and some of Nevada's elected representatives. I especially want to thank Senior Project Manager Crystal Chang for her work on coordinating and memorializing all of the listening sessions, and I look forward to your presentation today. Additionally, Dr. Kyle Kahlberg, UNLV Executive Director of Strategy and Strategic Initiatives, will also give a presentation to the committee today regarding alignment and implementation of strategic planning. It's nice to have you here today, Dr. Also, I want to officially welcome Acting Chancellor Dale Urquiaga to the work of the committee. The Acting Chancellor comes to ENSHE with experience in strategic planning and enthusiasm for this work that I truly appreciate. It's my hope that today's meeting will provide us a framework as we contemplate next steps in this deliberate, future-focused system planning process. So next is item number 3, listening session feedback with Crystal Chang, Senior Project Manager, ENSHE. Thank you, Crystal.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, everyone. For the record, my name is Crystal Chang, Senior Project Manager for ENSHE. In regard to the listening sessions, which was a major component under the ENSHE strategic planning process, I'm sure many people are curious about the type of feedback received, especially if you did not get a chance to attend a session. I'll be providing a summary of what we'd heard during the ENSHE listening sessions that sought feedback from the institutions as well as the local communities. The goal in mind was to incorporate critical items into crafting our new strategic plan. Many of you here may have participated and or observed some of these listening sessions. To start my presentation, I'll give a brief overview of the listening sessions. We held the listening sessions, 12 in total, between December of 2021 and April of 2022. We had mostly in-person sessions and I believe 2 virtual sessions via Zoom. The in-person sessions took place throughout Nevada at all of our institutions. They were open meetings, so everybody was welcome to participate. The audience included our students, faculty and staff, institution presidents, regents, state assembly members, former state senators, and community members. We received a wide range of feedback from these sessions. And in trying to organize these feedback, I categorized them into the five previously approved strategic goals, which I'll go into a bit more detail shortly. There were six main topics that we used throughout the listening sessions, and they are workforce development, research collaboration, student support, academic support, funding, and partnership. Depending on the institutions that we were holding the listening session, we would then narrow down to 2 to 3 topics. For example, when we did the listening session at DRI, we talked about research collaboration and funding. Before I go into the listening session feedback, I just want to briefly mention the five strategic goals previously approved by the board, which, as they are still very much relevant. The first one is access, which is to increase the percentage of Nevadans participating in higher education. The second, success, is to improve the number of individuals with a post-secondary degree. The next one, close the achievement gap, which is to increase higher education enrollment in our underrepresented populations. Number four is workforce, which is to improve workforce development for in-demand occupations. The last one is research, which is to develop practical solutions to the top priority issues in our state and raise the research profile of our universities. And with that, I'll get into the core of the presentation. As I mentioned earlier, I organized the feedback into the five categories, and these are repeated things that we heard. First up, we have access. Just as a side note, many of these feedback come in forms of recommendations and suggestions. One of these is we should partner with high schools across the state to facilitate sessions to educate underserved student populations, which include low-income families, minority groups, first-generation college-bound, on how and when to apply or obtain scholarships, grants, and other financial aid for college. There were talks about collaboration between the universities, UNLV, UNR, with the colleges such as CSN, GBC, and NSC to increase transfer rates and course credit recognition. We should also open up the sharing of institutional resources for not just students, but also faculty and staff. For example, access to various campus library research database should be shared amongst all institutions. There is no reason why a student from CSN shouldn't be able to go to the UNLV library and utilize the resources there. We also need to increase or expand online and remote course options for out-of-state students, as some institutions have programs that have high number of students that are physically out-of-state. There is also a need to expand overall higher education access to Nevada's indigenous population. We can do so by continuing the existing tuition fee waiver and providing indigenous liaison at our institutions. The second group of feedback is under success. We are looking to enhance or implement initiatives targeted towards improving graduation and retention rates. For example, the institutions holding mandatory advising sessions and have available counselors or special liaisons for students that require extra help. We also heard many people that say we need to make our institutions student ready versus the traditional mentality of having college ready students. By being student ready, our institutions should help incoming students become as college ready as possible. Some universities in the nation have summer programs that targeted towards incoming students who might be underprepared to help them catch up in core classes or introduce the available campus services. We're also becoming more aware of the importance of recognizing and acting on mental health challenges as students face increased and various stressors that directly affect their academic success. We need to hire high caliber faculty and staff members and professors to keep our institutions competitive and retain students who may otherwise leave for other higher education institutions. There are also conversations that stem into the K through 12 and the importance of setting up high school kids for success before they even enter college. A partnership with the K through 12 sector could make significant impact. A good example is the dual enrollment program, which has been a positive initiative for a long time now. The third group of feedback goes under close the achievement gap. We should develop need-based scholarship programs or campus employment opportunities to aid and encourage attendance from the underserved populations. We need the provisioning of counseling, school-provided tutoring sessions, enrichment opportunities, and support structures on campus for the student population that experience achievement gaps. Different student population, such as minority, first generation, or other at-risk students, need different guidance to get to the finish line. Our institutions need to have the right faculty and staff, such as counselors, mentors, tutors, who have a deep understanding of the existing achievement gap. The right people can help promote a sense of belonging for the underserved populations and engage these students to thrive and perform better. As a side note, there are defined groups of students that historically experience academic achievement gap. While we want to close that gap, it would appear that we currently don't have sufficient data sets or metrics to measure that. We need to develop and track these numbers if we want to understand what we're doing right or where we're not doing enough. The fourth group of feedback is under workforce. People are looking for credits being granted for prior learning or other significant life experiences, such as military duty, industry experience, or language knowledge. We also have an emerging trend of stackable credentials as new path to a degree or job. That is something we shouldn't ignore. Allowing students to earn enough credits to quickly go into their desired work field or career path can be efficient and all around save time and money. By adapting this methodology and creating those pathways for our students, we are also strengthening our workforce. There is an abundance of untapped resources out in our communities. Our institutions need to build partnership equity by reaching out to the local communities and organizations to, number one, get a real-world understanding of our industry needs, education needs, and number two, take advantage of workforce internships that are available to our students. The industries in our communities are regularly talking about the lack of qualified human capital. We need to pinpoint those needs for the next 5 to 10 years. Once they're identified, take action to implement and provide programs at our colleges and universities to fulfill these needs. The feedback categorized under research says we need dedicated resources to increase efforts in bringing more grant dollars to our institutions. Our researchers tend to struggle with time and resources, their available time to do research work versus their teaching responsibilities and lack of admin support. The question asked was, how do we lessen our researchers' teaching duties so that they can focus on research? There is also a need to increase diversity in graduate research programs. The current lack of diversity is seemingly due to few opportunities for our underserved communities to participate. We can also raise our overall research profiles by putting more focus on Desert Research Institute. DRI often go unnoticed and treated as an afterthought. Research professors at DRI often use their own time to do K through 12 outreach to educate younger students about the sciences and mentor them in the different fields of research. We should promote collaborative research efforts amongst NSHE institutions by establishing joint research task force so that they can share assets, labs, personnel, and cultivating research activities for graduate students. Last but not least, there are some miscellaneous themes that were repeatedly mentioned. Overall, many areas and departments talk about underfunding. Faculties often feel shortchanged. Folks feel that relying on the traditional model of grants and government support is no longer working, and we need to rethink the state's funding formulas. There are also significant concerns around student support. We have a large student population who are not necessarily your traditional students. We have older students, students with kids and or full-time jobs. These students often face additional challenges with completing degrees, such as financial hardships or abilities to attend classes due to time constraints. We're also looking at increased focus on diversity, equity, and inclusion. Some institutions have dedicated staff for DEI and others don't. Some people have voiced that they volunteer time to do DEI-related work, which also overlaps with the need for liaison for minority students. We heard a lot about compensation not being competitive enough or lacking to the point where our employees cannot afford basic living requirements. For example, hard economic situations where local housing market becomes unaffordable. How do we attract and retain talents was another big question that was asked at our sessions. We're not competitive enough in comparison to our neighboring public universities and colleges in states such as California, Arizona, Utah, Idaho, and Oregon. Many of our talented staff and professors become very successful, and they leave because they receive better offers elsewhere. And Nevada's tribal nations have also voiced their concerns about underrepresentation and the need to have tribal colleges and liaisons. That concludes my presentation. I have one last note that this is not inclusive of all the feedback we received and only a summary of a lot of different concerns and feedback we collected at these 12 listening sessions. Thank you.
Thank you for that overview of the listening sessions. That feedback was really very, very good to hear as somebody who attended a few of them. Are there any questions or comments from those on the committee or other regents? Regent Perkins.
I have a question. No worries. Do you have a breakdown? Do you have a breakdown of like the groups that attended and the groups that made comments? Do you have like a breakdown of age, ethnicity, et cetera, of the comment of the people that were there attending the listening session?
The participants?
Yes.
Depending on the institutions that we did the listening sessions, a lot of them were students or student body government officers. I mean, they're really all ages.
Do you have that, like, concrete, like, so many people, there was 10% of the people 18 to 25, or?
We didn't collect that data because we didn't ask the participants to provide their demographical data. It was, you know, really an open meeting. We did collect, we asked the participants to register online, but we didn't ask for their specific information.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for that sure. Question, Vice Chair Perkins. Regent Boylan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate that. And just a few comments. I'm not on this committee, I know. But when I had the opportunity to first talk to the person who was in this position that Mr. Urquiaga holds now, we had discussed this, and I was kind of surprised that we didn't already have a strategic plan like we've talked about. Now, most of this seems to me like a cornucopia of wishes and things that I would expect a system like ours to already have in place. I see this in number two. And if you don't mind, ma'am, I'll just go to this one. It says, hire and retain high-caliber faculty members. I think we're already doing that. I think we have some awesome faculty member and a bunch of other things in there that I'm not sure what we, I know that there's been a lot of meetings and I know there've been people who've attended and the young lady, Ms. Chan, has done a good job. And you've been to all the meetings and you've listened to people. But I'm still wondering, why don't we have all these things in place already? I think we do. And is there any specific rules, regulations that deny any people, race, group, color, anything of students to not avail of these situations? You, ma'am, are a businesswoman, successful, and that's awesome. But you know that you don't give away freebies to anybody for anything. We are the caretakers of the taxpayers' money. And all the time saying we should give this to free people because they're immigrants, because they're this group, because they're that group. That's not a way to run a business. And yet I hear other regents and people say, this should be run as a business. Well, let's run it as a business. Our clients are students. Let's do something about that. And I'd really like to know if there's any research done on all of this. Are there any rules and regulations that stop any group from, I'm like I said before, an immigrant, and I had no problems joining any group, any class, any university or college here in America. And I ended up being a chair of a department and et cetera, et cetera. I've never seen that happening. Is there some way that we can help these people who think that there is a white wall that stops them from joining college or university? Did we get any of that, or we just cornucopia of all this? And one last thing, just because I've been an instructor and professor, there's some typing mistakes or spelling mistakes in there. I won't point them out, but we are a university and we are higher education. I hope they look them up and catch them. And I know Mr. Council Kilroy is surprised, but I'll give you one right there, number four. And it talks about something about pinpoint and identity, what the state is lacking. Nah, not nice. But there's a few others. So just, I'd really like to know, with all these meetings and things, is there a white wall of denying people permission into any institution? Thank you, ma'am. I know that was a bit too much, but I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Regent Boylan. Just as a reminder, this was just a compilation of the feedback that we received from participants at each of the listening sessions. So there isn't a stated problem or goal other than this is what we heard from those who participated at the listening sessions. So obviously it's something that we can address and look into, and I do think that there is a concerted effort to understand what our faculty and staff, how they reflect our communities. And so I appreciate that question. Ms. Chang was just giving an overview of our listening session feedback, and we did hear some of that. And as I said, I think some of it was very informative for those of us there to hear. And I think that's why we're working on this next iteration, so to speak, of our strategic planning. We did have a plan in place, and it was that plan was from 2017, I believe, to 2021, and the previous chancellor felt that the time was right to start this process again and look a little bit more intentionally into areas that are becoming more important and need that focus. So I appreciate the questions that you've brought up, and I think that that's something that we always strive to work on and will continue to do so, especially during the strategic planning process. So I hope that answers your questions, and I appreciate the input. So thank you.
Thank you so much. Yes, ma'am. Sorry for interrupting, but thank you so much. That does help me, and I look forward to anything you come up with. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Are there any other questions or comments from Regents? Chair. Regent Perkins, please.
Thank you, Chair Carvalho. A lot of these things, it seems like we are doing already, so it might be just a letting the public know that we're already doing that, like the promote collaboration research efforts amongst our institutions. That's already happening. Maybe we don't put it out there enough, or maybe don't tell people enough or give enough feedback to the public so that they know that these are the things we're doing. And I guess the thing that I thought was missing from the strategic goals is they had no deliverables. Like, there was no percentages. There was no, like, when you say increase access, if you want to increase access, do you want to increase it by 2%, 1%? What would be the goal? And that's hard to measure yourself if it just says, oh, increase access. You know, it's very hard to admit. So is that, like, a next step?
I'm glad you asked, because that definitely is a next step in this committee's work. And that's something that we'll be discussing later in this meeting. So thank you for teeing that up just a slight bit early. And regarding the research, and of course, Crystal, you can chime in on this or any others. I think that there was a conversation I remember distinctly at UNLV that there wasn't a database or some sort of formal way of actually communicating what others are doing, other than those maybe in the same area of research, if they worked collaboratively together previously, that they knew that what someone was working on. But there seemed to be a theme to me that in terms of research, there could be a little bit more collaboration among our institutions in terms of communicating what is going on. So not necessarily communicating it to the public, although I think that is definitely something that we can do more of. But I felt like it was more of a technical request for sharing of research among our institutions.
Yes. Yes, exactly. That I understand where this was going, but that would just pick that one out as like an example. But like, just there's so many things on this list that we are already doing that need to be broadcast a little bit louder.
Completely agree. I agree with you on that, and I think we hopefully that can be part of our planning process moving forward is communication once again. So thank you for bringing that up. That is definitely an important piece of this. So thank you. Any other questions or comments from Regents? Crystal, thank you for your presentation. Okay, we will move on to item number 4, Strategic Planning Task Force. Acting Chancellor Dale Urquiaga.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Dale Urquiaga, Acting Chancellor. So a little bit of background. When I arrived on July 1st, there were a number of reports from task forces sitting on my desk, and there were some task force reports still outstanding. It took me a little while to figure out that these task forces were essentially initiatives of the Chancellor's office. They were not all necessarily tied into feeding to the strategic planning work. Others were initiatives that the Chancellor's office felt were of systemic importance. And so I, however, have a tidy little mind, and I had to figure out how these things could cohere in an aligned manner. And so I have treated them as information to supplement the listening sessions that might inform this body's strategic plan going forward. So first, I want to begin by thanking everybody who participated in these task forces over probably the last year to 2 years. Dozens of people joined these efforts and delivered reports to my office. with the assistance of Executive Vice Chancellor and Chief of Staff Crystal Abba. We now have reports, or at least draft reports, if the task force work was not complete, from all of the entities you see on this list. And I'll give you a quick summary sort of where these folks landed in each one. So the dual enrollment task force was done when I arrived. Some of this the board acted on in establishing uniform fees last December. Some of the other items remain outstanding for the academic officers to deal with as we move forward this year. The equity in hiring and retention initiative, that group has also delivered recommendations related to data collection and the need to set goals around diversity hiring practices for administration, faculty, and staff. So these are recommendations that we might choose to take up. The Joint Research Task Force, a very complete document on my desk when I arrived. And again, it was about understanding among the researchers what's going on in the other camps, because we have 8 institutions who conduct some level of research, some more than others. Practitioners kind of wanted to know what others were doing and if the system wished to elevate 2 or 3 primary areas of research. And this is not recommended by the task force, but I'll give you one that lands on my inbox just about every week since I've had this job, and that's the lithium battery economy in the state. We have many folks working in that space. We are the only place on the globe where we have, from extraction to recycling, the ability to sort of own that industry space. So one might elevate that as a system-wide research topic, for example, a recommendation. The Mental Health Task Force, the committee has heard me discuss this a bit at the ELCO meeting. That group has rightly recommended more survey work so we understand the mental health needs of our students and our faculty and staff. We have some information about students. We have less about faculty and staff. They've also recommended the establishment of a wellness officer position here at the system, which we think will be funded through SAMHSA. The Online Learning Task Force, again, a desire for data, an inventory. What are the licenses that we hold? What are the equipment needs? How are we delivering online education in the online modality? And is that uniform? Should it be uniform? Mostly these folks' recommendations are about learning more about this modality, because when we threw everyone into this modality during the pandemic, it's now not going away. It probably was never going to go away before. And so it's here to stay. How might we systemically support the institutions? The Teacher Pathways Task Force, lots of recommendations here were legislatively focused, and this was a joint initiative with the Nevada Department of Education. Superintendent Ebert and I have discussed this task force and what future work might include. As the committee is well aware, I used to have the job of state superintendent, so this is an area that I have some expertise in. There's a lot of things in this job I don't have any expertise in. So the superintendent and I can probably carry this work into maybe a 2.0 area. And then lastly, the Workforce and Talent Development Task Force. Some really interesting draft recommendations here related to how we as a system, as well as the 8 institutions, deal with Nevada's talent pipeline issues. We have our own talent pipeline issues for vacancies, but the state has talent pipeline issues, some more pronounced than others. The 2 most famous ones, of course, are nursing and teaching, but there are gaps across our state's economy. And so some really interesting conversation about sort of a center for the future of work that we might consider as a system, and also a conversation reflected in this document that I have had subsequently with the Governor's Office of Economic Development about the need to Regent Perkins' point, set targets. If, for example, we need 3,000 machinists by 2028, then we know we need 3,000 machinists by 2028. If we need 2,400 teachers per year, which I think is the number, we ought to set that as a benchmark. And then we know what portion our institutions are responsible for, what portion private institutions might have to carry, and what portion the state's workforce boards might carry. So some really interesting recommendations with these task forces, with that particular task force around the talent pipeline. So in summary, lots of great information. I have all these reports. I'm going through them with my cabinet and the presidents to see which pieces we can implement right away, which pieces require further study, and which pieces we might bring to you if you give direction to staff to continue with this strategic planning effort. And I want to again thank all of the dozens of people, and I am very pleased because there's been lots of work going on, and I get lots of reports to sort of sunset all of these task forces as we wrap up this work today. There are a couple of these that I think I will come to the board and ask or advise that I would like to probably appoint a chancellor's committee to continue with a very specific charge for a very specific amount of time. I'm not a big fan of task forces that have no end date and that have no deliverable. And so if we do take up a couple of these issues, it should come of no surprise to you that I am thinking about this, particularly with mental health awareness. There would be a chancellor committee appointed pursuant to the code that has an end date and a deliverable back to this, to the board as a whole, or to the chancellor's office as appropriate. So these, I appreciate all the work. I will continue to distill it into the plan where appropriate, or into the institutions if that's more appropriate. I think we will benefit from all the work and that knowledge. That concludes my report, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chancellor. Any questions or comments for the Chancellor on his update on the task forces? Okay, then we will move on to item number 5, implementation of strategic plans. So Mr. Kyle Kahlberg with UNLV, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good morning, Regents, Chancellor, and all that are present, whether in the room or online. My name is Kyle Kahlberg, and it is my pleasure to have been invited here today. I serve as Executive Director for Strategy and Strategic Initiatives at UNLV, where I've worked with our strategic plan since 2014. Today, I'm going to talk to you about 4 broad categories. Kind of 1, our plan, so you have some context for it. 2, my role. 3, how the NSHE goals relate to the work I do. And 4, some thoughts to share. So as you know, strategic planning is critical to any institution. A well-developed plan provides direction and a path forward and a roadmap for stakeholders to engage in and follow to ensure that progress is made over time. This only not only helps it increase and advance on your admission, but it increases the overall health and vitality of the institution. However, it's very easy to become overly focused on strategic planning. As we know, getting feedback, input, wordsmithing, feedback loops, working to ensure the plan reflects the organization and that's something that everyone can agree on is a very cumbersome process. But it is a process, and what is important is that execution once the plan is in place. This isn't something that we do to check off our list, put on the shelf and say, got that taken care of, move on. It's something that we have that we should be living every day. After a year-long planning process, our strategic plan was implemented in 2015 and has been reviewed regularly to monitor and gauge our progress and to address issues as they arise. In 2018, it was strengthened by reorganizing it because our initial plan, of course, was one that said, you know, we'll have a great office of this and thriving that. But what does that really mean when you come down to it? What are those deliverables? So we took it and organized it by objectives with specific metrics tied to each objective. And it was a way that it seemed much more manageable for execution. During fall of 2020, President Whitfield arrived. He engaged in campus listening tours with over 500 participants. They provided their feedback. And then we went through this process again of working through the executive committee, cabinet, deans, academic council, faculty senate, committees across campus, focus groups to get feedback and make our next iteration, which we branded as Top Tier 2.0, to show that it's our plan that's continuing, but it's that next iteration of it. So with our plan, we are driven by our vision, our mission, and our values. Our vision communicates where we are going. Our mission operationalizes our plan, and our values communicate our identity and who we are to stakeholders. Our plan does have 8 core areas, which I will say is a lot for a strategic plan. However, based on the way we function as an institution, that is what works best for us. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment. But each core area is defined, and it contains a set of strategic objectives and tasks. And those tasks are basically strategies. These objectives and tasks provide a framework that can be adapted and developed at the unit level to guide priorities and actions that align with the overall strategic plan for the university. And all of our objectives have metrics, which help guide our efforts, inform decision-making, and provide insight as priorities are determined. And you'll notice, I've put an example up here, that not only do we measure them each year, but we have goals projected out through 2030. Because we have taken and looked at each of these areas, and based on our past performance, based on benchmarking other schools, looking at our enrollment growth and projections, figured out where it is we think we can get to in a reasonable manner, and then we measure our progress each year to see how we're progressing towards that. We evaluate these annually. If we find we are missing our goal a few years in a row, then we will reevaluate it and adjust it. But we want to be sure that we continue to advance on our trajectory and fulfill our mission. So when you my role, there are several parts to it, but if I had to sum it up in one sentence, I would say it's to keep the plan alive. I work directly with the president because it is his plan, but that also involves a close collaboration with the provost because that gives me access to all of our academic units as well. We've established the top-tier executive committee, and that is our oversight group, which provides direction for our plan, wrestles with issues and challenges, and helps monitor progress. Talked earlier about those eight core areas, and one of the reasons we have eight core areas is because then we can assign a chair who is responsible for that area. So they are the individual that needs to be sure that the actions are occurring. So for example, one of our goals is student achievement, which focuses on student success. And we have it subdivided into three areas with our vice provost for undergraduate education leading the undergraduate portions, our vice provost for graduate education, of course, with graduate, et cetera. So that gives us that structure that really places responsibility in an area where those actions can't occur. Our chairs lead the area. They develop annual action plans. And for other areas where we don't have those natural structures occurring, such as social justice, equity, and inclusion, community partnerships, infrastructure, what we've done is we've worked to develop charters, and we still have a lot more work to do in this area, but it goes through and specifies this is the purpose of this area, this is what they're responsible for, these things are not their responsibility, and this is how they function. So kind of working to get all those aligned. With our strategic plan, we make sure we're aligned, of course, with ENSHE. We're aligned with our accreditors to make sure we can be accredited. And we also look to other agencies such as GOED, Career and Workforce Development. We also work to align across campus. And as you know, this is difficult because every unit has different ways that they function, different priorities, different needs. So what we want is to, we've taken our plan and we've said, okay, here are the ENSHE strategic goals. Here's how they are embedded into our plan. Plus we have other areas as well, because that's important to us as an institution. Now down to the unit level, let's see how you look at our key metrics, the biggest ones, retention, graduation, research, career development, and then also focus on the areas that you really need, you know. If it's the ceramics department, it's, you know, the number of pottery pieces made, the number of exhibitions, et cetera. So we really look to see that we have that common thread all the way from the department all the way up to ENSHE. Data, of course, this is a huge part. Measurement is one thing, but measuring what matters is another thing. And we really work to make sure we are getting the appropriate measurements. Now, at the federal level, that's a little bit easier. So when we look at, like, IPEDS data, what's reported to NSF, that's already defined, it's precise, submitted, not a problem. Where it gets to be a lot more challenging is when we look at community partnerships, social justice, infrastructure, because we don't have national clearinghouse data that is submitted. So we've had to develop all those. We've had to define them. We've had to develop a process, who's responsible, where the data is housed, how it's collected, how it's reported out. But we'll continue to get better with this, but we want to look at that so that we can continually monitor our progress and make sure we are adjusting and moving forward. We also have metrics that are much more detailed for the core areas. So while we ask our university as a whole to be sure we're cognizant of those big metrics, again, with retention, graduation, research, et cetera, we also have a whole set of metrics that are very specific within those individual areas. So student success looks at their advising ratios. They look at social mobility, all those kind of inputs that directly affect our output metrics. And as I said, the purpose is
Chair Carvalho? Sorry. Chair Carvalho, if I may.
Sure.
Just a quick question on the data. How much of that goes through the system office where they've got the database for all the institutions, or is that just collected at UNLV?
So it depends. Some of it, of course, like the IPEDS data goes through the system, but other areas like community partnerships, that is housed just within UNLV.
Does that answer your question, Regent Geddes?
Kind of. Thanks.
Thank you.
So we do house all of our major data points on our website. So if you go into and Google UNLV Top Tier 2.0, you can go under the core area and the progress page, and you'll see like the graph that I'd put up earlier, which shows you where we are with all those data. More work to be done in that area, but I'll talk about that later. Another major part is to communicate progress. So each year, and we're working on this right now, you put together a progress card. So it aligns to our mission. Here are some of the metrics that speak directly to that. Here's how we're doing. Here's where we're going by 2030. Monthly, I push out across campus electronically what's called Focus on Top Tier 2.0, which is just meant to keep at the top of people's minds that we continually look at this. It tells us what our goal is, a little bit about the goal, where we were, where we are, where we're going, why it matters, and kind of that general what can be done to continue increasing in this area. We hold campus forums to talk about what our data seem to be revealing to us. We have a website that is meant to be comprehensive and transparent to provide all of that information so that anyone can access it. And then next would be strategic events, working on large-scale campus events that are focused on strategy. So, for example, every fall we do data sharing and recommended practices. Working with decision support, they take our key metrics at the university level, they break it down to the college and the department level. We push that out, we bring our leaders together, so campus leadership, deans, all level of deans, department chairs, as well as they can invite anyone else. We record the session so it's available. We frame it in the first 15 minutes, and it's a two-hour session, around data, why we are looking at these data, their importance, what can be done. And then we spend the majority of the time talking about practices that we can engage in. And it's led by our Vice Provost for Undergraduate and Graduate Education and our Vice President for Research. So they talk about how we can take a look at these and what can be done. It's meant to allow them to look at their performance compared to the university and to advance their practice through thoughtful data analysis. We also do maintaining R1 workshops. So, of course, as a Carnegie R1 institution, that's a very important designation. And it's important that our campus understands that this is a shared responsibility. This isn't something that just happens, but everyone has a role in it. What does it really mean? What are the data points? Why is it that when you hire a non-faculty researcher, you absolutely must have that coded correctly in the system rather than putting them in as an LOA? Because it severely affects our data, which affects what goes into Carnegie, which affects our overall ranking. So really educating everyone to understand what it means, what and what can be done about it, and how this aligns with our daily activities. As we know, we like the designation, but the hallmark of a research university is being able to do great research, and that's really what we want to get after. This past year, we had our first Southern Nevada Leadership Summit. It is now an annual event. It was received extremely well by the community. We invited in C-suite leaders from all business and industry across the valley. We ask them to provide their expertise and input as we envision the future of student career readiness. This involved them sitting in small groups of eight, providing feedback to a series of questions that were asked, moving into other groups with different folks, different questions. We did that three times. Massive amounts of data, which we will then use to revise our career development portion of our strategic plan, which is workforce development focused, and then figure out what it is we need to do to meet their needs that align with the university. I've also partnered with the Provost and Business Affairs to do a resource forum so that our campus constituents understand revenue streams, how money is utilized, our financial plan, and how this all comes together to guide our strategic priorities. And finally, of course, my role involves being on campus leadership groups such as Cabinet, Deans of Research, Academic Council, collaborating with accreditation, community engagement, working with departments upon their request to help them advance what they're doing. So how do the NSHE strategic goals relate to my role? So when these were developed, first thing I did is took them and correlated them to our plan to see what we had included and what we were missing. We then took those to the executive committee, made those revisions to make sure that we were completely aligned. Challenges, of course, research is an area we can do well in, but the workforce area at first was a challenge because some of the metrics that were identified didn't necessarily pertain to a university. So I know that's one thing you have to really be cognizant of are different institutions and how they function. Secondly, making sure that we do collect and document the metrics, look at them to make sure we understand what it is they say and what they mean to us as an institution in the context of our strategic plan. So for example, you look at persistence across institutions, that isn't applicable as much to us because we're looking at retention for our institution because that feeds into overall persistence. So understanding kind of those nuances and differences and how they pertain to us. So kind of some of the big points that I like to think about often, and maybe these will be useful for you in your discussion as you go forward. What is the overall vision of NSHE? Where do you see yourself in 5 years, 10 years, 20 years from now? And how does this translate to the institutions? And as I said before, I think it's very important that we honor and respect the different institutions and their missions. We all serve different populations in different environments with different contextual factors. We're apples and oranges, and we can't paint the oranges red and say, okay, now we can put everybody on the shelf and say, this is how we all look, okay? Some of that, yes, but other areas, definitely not. Our missions are tied to our accreditation, which is another factor to think about, too. And then what about values? Crystal talked about being student-ready as an institution, and I think of that often. But I also think pandemic, budget crisis. For the next decade, we're going to be having students come to us with academic gaps, mental well-being challenges, and that we're operating in a very different environment. And then what are the end goals? We don't want to just catch up. I know that it's hard. You know, oftentimes we're lacking infrastructure in areas and we just want to get to where everybody else seems to be. But we also have to think how we can leap ahead and be a leader in spaces, and what would our strategies be to get there? And when I say end goals, I do want to point out I am not by any means advocating that we have numbers set in terms of goals for institutions, but kind of what is the big picture that NSHE wants to get to so that we as an institution understand that and how we can do what we need to do to move towards that. And then priorities. Priorities I know are difficult, but we have to understand what is our big priority and what are the tactics to move us forward. So earlier we talked about nursing and education. So when I read in the paper that, you know, there's this teacher shortage, and I was an elementary teacher, so it's near and dear to my heart. I have two little children, so it's really close to my heart. I look at it and I say, oh gosh, what do we do? Then I look at the GOED report that came out that says this is the number of teachers that are going to be needed in the state. And I'm like, okay, stay here. Like, how does, I don't understand, how do we flesh this out so I can look and say, okay, here's kind of like what we should be considering as an institution, how that fits into NSHE, how it fits into the state. So I think a way to help kind of look, and that may be an area where we need to look really closely at numbers, and how can we read that, interpret it, and understand what it is that is really needed so that we can move forward. And then finally, affinity groups. So, you know, having this committee is great because it helps me understand what it is that's happening across NSHE. But we need to be sure that other individuals like myself that are working with presidents, provosts, that we understand what NSHE's overall vision is, that we read, interpret, and understand our strategic goals so that we can be effective in the work that we do. So I hope that is helpful as I've shared a little bit about my role and what I do and how this ties to you overall. As I said, I have two young children that are being raised in this state, so I do underscore the importance of the work that you do, not only for us today, but particularly long-term down the road. I'd be happy to clarify anything I've said or answer any questions.
Thank you, Dr. Kahlberg. Does anybody have questions or comments? Regent Boylan, yes, please.
You are too kind. Thank you, Madam Chair. And this, I guess, mainly goes to you, Mr. Kyle. Like Ms. Chen, did wonderful presentations, and I love to see the red colors of UNLV. But if we have this awesome stuff that this, you know, this strategic, what do you call it? The executive of strategy and strategic initiatives. Can we somehow, like he said right in the end, he's getting lots of information from this committee, and I think that's awesome. Can we somehow combine, not combine the committee, and combine all the work, data, et cetera, and have Ms. Chen and Mr. Kyle give us a presentation or something in a future meeting just to see how much has, you know, the crossover and what could be used and how we could develop it to help our strategic plan? Because I like how Mr. Kyle says, where does NSHE expect to be in 10 years? Who's going to make that decision? Just a suggestion, really, not even a question, but something like that, right? Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, Regent Boylan. I'm going to go to Acting Chancellor Urquiaga to answer that for you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Dale Urquiaga, Acting Chancellor. Regent Boylan, I'm actually going to try and deal with that idea, that strategy, if you'll pardon the term, in the next agenda item, how we sort of collate some of what you're hearing. I want to thank Dr. Kahlberg for his presentation. I actually met him at one of the leadership events that he referred to and was thrilled that we had somebody in the system. I think he's unique. And I'm sure he's unique as an individual. I mean, his role is unique. And so I made him come and explain to me what he does, because it's a muscle we don't have in the system office and in many of our institutions. And so I'm going to try to draw on his expertise and that information presented to you earlier by Ms. Chang in the next section. So thank you, Kyle. My pleasure.
Thank you, Mr. Kiaga. And of course, Mr. Kyle was a teacher, then he has to be awesome. So thank you.
Thank you. Regent Brooks.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks for the presentation. I thought that was a fantastic one, because you clearly articulated where it seems like there are challenges in terms of some of the things that you're looking at specifically oriented to goals. And I greatly appreciate that as a regent. It also sounds like there's the possibility of creating some type of almost independence, because you pointed out that various campuses have various missions in terms of the things that they're doing, because they're servicing different demographics of our population. And so Do you feel stifled in that perhaps there's not better communication or policy that's derived for you to be able to feel like you have that independence to be able to create the things that you have to create specifically for UNLV, opposed to a one-size-fits-all for ENCHI?
So do I feel stifled? No. I think I feel pretty comfortable, especially with our president, in moving things forward in a direction that we feel is best. And with our president being able to work with the chancellor or whomever it may need to be to make sure that we are in alignment to do that. As I always tell our departments, you know, what we want to do is make sure we've got that commonality, but we really want to be sure we're highlighting your differences and that you can do the things that it is you need to do to move your area forward. So we want to be sure of that. And with that also, when we talk about challenges, because yes, I understand too, when we often hear from our constituents, they may say, well, we need better this or better that. And you say, well, we are doing this. And so I avoid saying that. I know I probably think it in my mind, but I try to get down to the ground level and say, well, why is it that your perception is that this is not happening or what is going on? So for example, one area, you know, our research expenditures has increased. Last year, we went down just a little bit, but before that, we had our highest level ever, which is, of course, what we want. And faculty were like, well, you know, unhappy. And it's like, so what? Where's the disconnect? You know, it seems like we're doing great. Well, it turned out there were some real problems on the ground in terms of being able to produce the research that they were trying to do because of infrastructure issues. So it was going down and figuring out what needed to happen. So fortunately, our interim VP for research at that time took that on as her central charge to address those issues and move that forward. So again, it's, you know, really making sure we can listen and pinpoint what it is they're talking about.
Yeah, so thank you. It sounded like there may be or may have been some communication gaps between the system and the institution in terms of the goals itself and how UNLV actually accomplishes the metrics of what looks like success for those goals based on, I guess, the independence of being able to get something done. Because I heard you offer that you wanted to work with inside the system to ensure that the goals are being met in a successful manner. Mm-hmm. And I almost felt like, I wonder if there's some reversal to that. Like, should we be taking a look at what you have going on as an institution and the things that you're challenged with at UNLV and have the conversation of what is it that you need from us in order for those goals to be successful and achievable? Mm-hmm. And so that there's this constant insurance of, we're all moving together, right? Regardless of the institutions that we're trying to serve in terms of the goals, but that there's cohesiveness between the institution and the system to make sure that these things are realistically obtainable.
Sure. I think that's an excellent point.
Thank you. That's all that I have, Chair. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you for your questions, Regent Brooks. I think those are important questions to ask as we move forward with how we want to structure our plan. Of course, we don't want to be in the way of our institution's goals and their missions, because like you said, they are different and it isn't a one-size-fits-all demographic that we have here. I'm curious, in terms of your values and your priorities, how does funding and the financial status of the university fit into your strategic plan?
Yes. So, you know, business affairs, they are the stewards of our money. And a lot of what we do for strategic priorities is run through either the provost's office and some of it through the president's office. So the president does have a strategic initiatives fund that we can utilize as needed for priorities that we need to deal with. And then the provost has taken a big step in terms of developing a model called DRAM, the Dynamic Resource Allocation Model, in which it focuses on taking our resources that we have looking at them carefully and then allotting them to match our strategic priorities. Whereas in the past, we've been more, this is the pie we have and we're going to split it up. It's, all right, let's take a look. And if we know an investment here is going to yield this, then how can we prioritize that to make sure that that's what we're doing? So I would say it's amid a culture shift right now.
Right, I would think so. Thank you for that. Does anybody else have any other questions or comments for Dr. Kahlberg? Thank you so much for your presentation today.
My pleasure.
I appreciate the insight that you've given us into UNLV's strategic planning. Thank you. Okay, next we will move on to item number 6, strategic planning framework proposal. Acting Chancellor Dale Arquiaga.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Y'all look very different from here. I decided to do this so I could use the PowerPoint maybe to greater effect. So some preparatory remarks, I think. So you will recall that I was the director of the Gwynn Center at the time I was appointed to this job. So as the director of the Gwynn Center and therefore an employee of the University of Nevada, Reno, I attended two of the listening sessions. One on the UNR campus and one at the TMCC campus. The former chancellor had also appointed me under the guise of my Gwynn Center job as a member of the advisory body that she put together. So there were internal listening sessions and there was an external advisory body that met once in the first quarter of this year. So I had sort of the outside elevation of this strategic planning effort. And then, as I said, I arrived here and I had Crystal Chang, who you've heard from, saying, okay, we had these listening sessions and I have some feedback, and I had all these task force reports, and I had folks who participated in the listening sessions or in the advisory council saying, what do you do now? And so my job often in the last 90 days has been sort of sense-making about where we are. And so I had a conversation with the chair and the vice chair, and the vice chair being the chair of this committee. We talked about, so what do you want me to do with this work that's been done? You want me to just scrub it and move on? Or shall we try to honor what has happened and put some coherence to the planning effort? And that's kind of where we landed in a board officer's call, that we should try to pull some of these things together. And so that was my impetus for setting the proposal that I'm about to share with you and for having the information presented as we have done so far on this agenda. I kind of wanted you to get in my head with me, scary place that it is, and understand, so here's what we got, and now where do we go next? And so I'm not asking for votes or decisions today. I'm asking for some direction. Your agenda item says you may direct me, and you may say, you know, really, Dale, we're tired of hearing about all of this, and we would like to move on with our lives. Or you may say, we'd like you to come back with this kind of thing, but not that kind of thing. So that's sort of my goal for the day. And I will say that as I have gone through this, a common theme today seems to be the word communication. So some of this is how we talk about ourselves, how we talk to ourselves. Also, the word I would offer to you is sort of the elevation of what you're hearing. Many of the things we heard this morning and we heard in the listening session belong at the institutional level. So to your point, those regents who've said this, like, we're already doing this. It's happening at the institutional level. So those things probably don't rise to the level of a system plan, but when you give folks an opportunity to communicate, by gum, they're going to communicate. And they're going to tell you about the thing that they wanted to say, even if it really isn't at your elevation, it's at another elevation. So part of my job, I think, is to figure out the right elevation as we go forward. Of importance, particularly to Regent Brooks, who has now conveniently left the room and will not hear me say this. Oh, good. He's behind me. Our institutional plans already exist. They're in place. And so we cannot now come in and say, and here is the new plan that makes all of those plans obsolete. We must sort of manage up into a system plan as well as provide what I would call connective tissue between the eight institutions on certain issues, things like vision, certain strategies. So I'm very cognizant of that. And toward that end, I'll just say now clearly, I would not recommend that this committee or the board change the five goals that were established in the prior plans. They're built into the institutional plans. You saw from Dr. Kahlberg, they use them. They index to them. We saw a presentation as recently as the meeting in Elko from Nevada State, who aligned their pillars to those goals, right? So no change to the big five. I might suggest that we add something alongside that, perhaps for the system office. And then I guess one last comment, building on what Dr. Kahlberg said, strategic plans, like budgets, are about setting priorities. They are a decision-making tool. Absent a plan or absent a budget, then like dogs and cats live together and it's the wild, wild west. And so there is, I think, a need for this kind of plan at the system level. But given where we are in our evolution, you have an acting chancellor who expires. My contract expired, maybe I don't, next year. And so we're in this place where we're going to be hiring a new chancellor. And so we ought not go too far and bake a fully complete plan that is our plan for the next 5 to 10 years, because I guarantee you, your new chancellor would want to revisit that within a first couple of years that he or she is on the job. But I do think as you hire a new chancellor, having a vision and a direction and some expected deliverables would be super important. Otherwise, they're like me, and they arrive on day one, and they have all this information and all these little pots boiling over on the stove and all these little things on fire. And there are, to Dr. Kahlberg's point, no priorities against which to make those decisions. So that's my preface to why I think this is all important. As Chair Carvalho mentioned to you, I used to do strategic planning for a living. So I'm a little bit of a nerd about this. I apologize. I will try not to be too nerdy in how I talk about this. Everyone has gone through strategic planning. Everyone has had to write a mission statement. The two tasks together are like the worst thing that we can do in boards or in corporate life. I acknowledge that. However, this is sort of the framework that I outlined for the chair of this committee and the board, the chair of the board, as to how I think we could compile at least the necessary direction for the system and certainly the new chancellor. We don't have a vision statement or a vision as an organization. We don't have values stated as an organization. We do have a mission statement. It's rather long. I would not recommend amending it. We have five goals. Yay us. We're not so good at targets or outcomes. They're pretty generic. I'm a numbers person. No. In this one area, I should say I'm a numbers person. I'm a words guy. But here, you need to have a number that says it's 60% or it's 5,022 and it's by this year. We don't have that currently, and I think that makes it harder at the institutional level to align. And then we could, this is a decision point, add strategies. These strategies cross-cut all those within a goal, cross-cut the institutions, recognizing they're different, but these strategies might be system-level strategies. Versus institution-level strategies. And then lastly, what I would suggest is rather than a fully baked plan that has all the underneath goals, objectives and tactics, we might do that for a short period of time sort of on an annual basis. This is the way school improvement plans work in the K-12 system. There's a big goal for the year, and then you have annual measurable objectives, and you then have tactics to get to those. So drawing on that experience, I think that might be a direction that we choose to go. So let me talk about that a little bit and pull those pieces apart. So as I said, we don't really have a vision statement as a system. And a question for your committee is this a good exercise for the committee or the board? I promised you staff would bring you drafts so you do not have to wordsmith in live real time and jump around the room with dots or any of those things. But I think vision statements are important. They are about aspiration and a desired end state. I mean, they can take a couple of forms. There's some examples on the screen. They can be, as the last example, pretty specific. By 2030, we will be recognized as a leading 21st century institution. Or they could be very broad, help resolve the greatest challenges of the 21st century. At least then we know we're talking about the big stuff. We're not talking about all the pots on my stove that are boiling over all day long. So I think that is an important additive part of this process. I feel the same way about values. I would try to be, on my good days, a value-driven leader. And sometimes I am a micromanager and not a value-driven leader. But we don't really have this sort of shared values as a family, if you will, the system and its institutions. Those values that I do find from the last iteration of the goals is our vision, collaboration, and accountability. You would see in other plans at systems or institutions like ours, things like student-centered. I like the term student-ready very much, turns the table. Inclusion, something we talk about a lot, and yet it's not expressed really anywhere. Excellence, we talk about that a good deal of our time, of what we expect of our presidents. And so one might go through an exercise like this. This might require jumping around the room and voting with dots, where you would sort of express the values of the system. And I think that could help when you all get stuck and you're mired in your own challenges, returning to values of, look, we are about excellence or we are about student readiness, then we know that's how we make this decision, because these decisions are hard. And if you make values-based decisions, sometimes they're easier to make. The existing mission statement, again, I will not belabor it. It's long, but I think it's comprehensive and certainly adequate. The goals, again, I'm not going to touch these. You've seen them presented a couple of times, so I won't belabor the point. Some of the things that fall underneath them, the metrics, I would say I'll get to here. We set out sort of metrics. We are, as Executive Vice Chancellor Abba is always saying to me, we are data rich and information poor. We have a lot of data points and a lot of dashboards. We don't have a lot of inferences about what those mean. We also don't have a lot of deliverables. By this year, this percentage of Nevadans should have a post-secondary degree. The system had a goal like that at one time. It was required of them by a particularly pushy chief strategy officer who worked for Governor Sandoval, whose last name happened to be the same as mine. But we haven't had that in a while. And so we might set better, I think, deliverables or outcomes. In 5 years, we want this to be true. In 10 years, we expect this to be true. Then again, the institutions, to Regent Brooks' point, have a target at which to aim for their specific piece of that. My institution might not own a piece of that, but my institution, this other institution, might. So I think that's a critical component. Strategies, here's where I'd like some advice. Like, we could craft system-level strategies, things that are true across most, if not all, of the institutions. So an example here, my favorite topic. So for the access goal, a strategy might be provide students the opportunity to earn credit for college-level courses that also count towards graduation requirements for high school. There's a state law, in fact, that says that we will do this, so it's not really a stretch as a strategy. But I gave it to you as that is a strategy that is cross-cutting across the institutions. Probably everybody but DRI sees themselves in that kind of a strategy. So we don't have to do this at this point. You might say, staff, we want to see some work on vision, values, and targets. Peace out. The next chancellor will deal with the strategies. Or you might say today, yeah, go give us some strategies, draw from the feedback that you saw from Ms. Chang. So that's one level. And then the last level is, as I said, annual measurable objectives and tactics. Those are done, cleverly enough, annually. They might be done on the academic year. They might be done on a calendar year. And they get more granular. This year, we will do this thing. And so an example of this would be, under my strategy example, providing students the opportunity to earn credit for college-level courses. An objective for fiscal year 23 would be to increase system-wide dual and concurrent enrollment by 3,000 students. That is not a real number. Please, institutions, if you are listening, do not panic. Do not email me. Do not have your president call me. That is a placeholder number. But one might say, we want to increase the number of students who are receiving these kinds of credit. And we will do that in these two ways. Again, please do not call me. Please do not ask for a check. We will subsidize the payment of student fees with a special equity investment. Poor children and children of color still can't pay the $75 fee, I have been told, that we've set for dual enrollment. So we might subsidize that to get the number up. That's a tactic. We might, number two, increase high school instructor stipends. Again, do not call me and ask for money, but this is a way we might do that to make this easier for the districts or the charter schools to adopt our strategy. We could say, here's a little bucket of cash so that you can pay. So again, those kinds of things are very granular. They're the kinds of things that people recommend in feedback. Like, people tend to go to tactics and to annual objectives pretty fast and not like to stay up in the big strategy level. So we might get there this year. We might not. These you might expect of your new chancellor, depending when you hire that individual, to do this as sort of their first assignment. Or if, for whatever reason, I am still here at the start of the academic year, you might say to me, acting chancellor, we'd like to see a list of annual measurable objectives and tactics. So this kind of area I think we can think about in next year. The thing that I think is missing as I come in as the outside guy is what wonky people like me would like to tell you is called a unifying strategy or a foundational goal or core function. System administration, which is, as I said to you in the last committee meeting, a big part of what I do, doesn't show up in our strategic goals. Those goals are institutional in their elevation. There aren't things, for example, diversity initiatives, training initiatives with my own staff. How do I know that I'm contributing at a system level to your goals and to the institution's goals? I don't have a place to put that today. And so I've talked to a couple of the regents about this. We might add to those five goals kind of a, here's the system office plan or goal, or we could call it a strategy. I will nerd out about that and bring you back a recommendation. That at least would give us a placeholder. Some of the things that I have from these task forces are really about me. It's about appoint a wellness officer. It's about collect data so that we can make decisions. Those are system functions, and there's no placeholder for them. So then what happens is chancellors run off and create task forces initiatives, and you have no way to benchmark against that work. Did we ask you to do that? Did we not ask you to do that? How do we know we're hold you accountable for that? Again, to our earlier conversation. So if I were to add to this framework, this is an area that I would add. So I'll go back to my big picture. My recommendation to you after consultation with my own cabinet, looking at the feedback, talking to the Council of Presidents, talking to stakeholders, faculty, and students, these are the components that I think we could benefit from. Again, vision, values, mission, goals, probably in the little asterisks there, something about the system office or something foundational. Targets for sure. Strategies, annual objectives and tactics, I don't know. I'd like to hear from you how deep you want me to go in the time that this committee exists, the time that you have me, and as one regent said to me this morning on the phone, in the time we have before we are consumed by the legislative session, and that is what we think about all the time. So that's kind of my framework proposal for you to think about as a committee, and I'll show you how that might work out in a timeline on this slide. My recommendation to you is if you're going to do this, we try to button it up at the March quarterly meeting, that you're voting then on some level, vision, values, mission, targets, goals. Maybe that's all. Maybe it includes some strategies as well. And that we, over these next months, go through a process to get us to March. We bring you information and recommendations at the elevation you tell me feels right. We consult the external advisory committee. Certainly the Council of Presidents and the faculty and the Student Alliance would also be consulted so that we're not surprising them with something that we bring here. But I'm trying to honor the process that was established by my predecessor. There's this group out there. But again, my goal would be to, by March of 2023, we have a framework. How deep that framework goes, I need guidance so that you could use it as you interview applicants for this job, as I, if I am still in this job, testify at the legislature and talk about where the system wishes to go would be useful. And then when you get through that part, we would go to the task probably next summer of thinking about objectives and tactics. Again, that might be me. It might be a new chancellor, just depending on your time frame. So I know I just threw a lot of wonky stuff at you, but that's my attempt to make sense of the things that I've inherited to Regent Boylan's question of, can I take what we know from Dr. Kahlberg and can I take what we know from Ms. Chang and can I take what I know from these task forces? Yes, I can do that, and I can try to fit it into a framework like this and bring back things for you to be responsive to or consider in meetings going forward. So, Madam Chair, I will now stop talking and be happy to take questions.
Thank you, Mr. Acting Chancellor. I appreciate your enthusiasm. As I said earlier, I am absorbing it, and I think that our committee is too. I think this is good work for the future of our system. I will go to Regent Perkins, Vice Chair Perkins.
Thank you, Chair.
Madam Chair.
You're next.
Regent Boylan, I'll get to you next. Thank you.
Something sparked when you said before we become. Oh, first of all, great presentation. Lots of information, lots of deep thinking to do. And I appreciate that. When you mentioned the legislative session, some of these things will help us through that legislative session, like vision and goals. Those are very important when you're asking people to fund you. And so can that, I guess my suggestion or my thought process would be to work on those things that will get us to the legislative session like now, as opposed to putting them off, because it's going to wrap back into itself and we might be killing... We might be killing two birds with one stone, basically, you know, doing the work and getting these goals together. And I'm a strong proponent of deliverables and accountability, but that can wait after the vision and the goals.
Thank you, Vice Chair Perkins. I appreciate those comments. I'll go to Regent Boylan and then Regent Geddes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And like Regent Perkins said, I'm a big proponent of accountability too. Mr. Kiaga, that's a great presentation. And it's a shame that you're only a year and a half, because it takes me about a year to get used to people. So half the year is up. So let's see in the future. Now, I have something with your annual measurable objectives, I think. Now, your tactics 1 and 2, I don't remember the number of the page, but I really appreciate tactic 1, and I think that's great. It's been something I've been fighting for. Somehow we use other monies and blah, blah, blah to help students, because that's what we are here for. Now, number 2, it sounds really nice, and I bet you the teachers and schools will love it, but I don't know if we should be reaching out to give them some of the students' money here. I know they'll all be students eventually, and I'd rather give that money to our own faculty and staff to reach out to, you know, students in high schools and blah, 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 to bring them over for that. So I'll say number 1 of yours is like my top priority, really, besides a couple of other top priorities. And as usual, you always have a great way of presenting stuff. And in a short time that you've been here, I'm really impressed. I did talk to, when I did my due diligence about you, to the Gwynn people and the board of this, and they all had terribly nice things to say about you. So it was all good stuff. So if you could stress more on this number 1 of your tactics later on, it doesn't have to be today, because I know the chair has a time scheduled to keep, and I'm always so interested in everything that's going on. But if you could, you know, give me some more feedback in the board sometime, I would really appreciate that. Tactic 1 under annual measurables, et cetera, et cetera. So thank you so much. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, Regent Boylan. As a reminder, those were just examples, as the acting chancellor pointed out. So again, these aren't something that we are working on today, but appreciate your input in that. Regent Geddes.
Thank you, Chair Carvalho. And I just want to stress the point of metrics, as we talked about in the previous meeting and we talked about earlier with the campuses and the metrics and graduation rates, continuation rates, etc. I think those are very important to bring to the legislature and to make sure they're part of our overall strategic plan is where do we want to be and how are we getting there and what are those steps? And 2 points within there that I want to emphasize is the transfer and making sure that we're accurately, you know, we're tracking the transfer rates from the community colleges to the state college to the university or back to the community colleges, but we're actively tracking the transfer rates. And that we also look at the reverse transfer because we have that policy on reverse transfer where if someone goes from the community college to the state college or the university, once they hit the 60 credits, they should get an associate's degree back from the community college. And I'm not sure that's being tracked very well. And I think that would really help us in that aspect. And then as well, as we've talked about many times before, is the recruitment of those people who have taken many credits but have not gotten a degree or certificate and being able to find them and reach out to them and see if we can get them back in to get them at least a credential, if not a certificate or a degree. I know we've talked about efforts before, and I'm just not sure where we are there. And then the last point is, as the chancellor pointed out, is just the dual enrollment and concurrent enrollment. I mean, it's such a huge opportunity. And I know the school districts are very excited about it and really want to dive into it. And we need to make sure all of our teaching institutions are engaged where they can be. And we do as much as we can with the superintendents and with the state superintendent. It's a huge opportunity for us.
Thank you, Regent Geddes. I'm going to go to Acting Chancellor Urquiaga.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To you and through you to both Regent Geddes and Regent Boylan, thank you for those comments. So that's, for me, that's very helpful feedback, and I'll now be the explainer of how visioning and value setting works from a strategic planner. What you both just expressed is sort of a coherent vision that could be built down into plans. So Regent Boylan very specifically focused on, we want a student-focused plan, we want to have programs funding that falls there first. That is a strategic direction. One could build strategies around that. Regent Geddes described, if this is a word, systeminess. Like, because we are a system, and to hold us together, one, and also to make life better for our customers, things like transfer, reverse transfer, dual credit, those things require connective tissue between the institutions and a direction or a strategic vision that's what matters to us. Yes, other things matter at the institutional level, but systeminess, if that's now a word that I'm just going to use forever, matters to us. And student focus, prioritizing their needs, their incentives, that also, those are values, those are visions, vision statements, that's strategic direction. So super helpful for me. It helps me know kind of drafts that I might bring back to you. So thank you, both.
Thank you, Mr. Urquiaga. Are there any other questions or comments? Thank you for that presentation. I have heard it from at least one region, and I agree that working on, actually it's more than one region, I'm sorry to say that, but working on our goals and strategies before the session I think is important. I think, I'm sorry, vision and goals, you know what I'm talking about. strategies and tactics I think are something that maybe can wait until after the session. So I would think that that's something that we can work more with staff to provide in upcoming meetings.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Dale Arquiaga, that's perfect. That's what I heard. That's good direction for staff. And I will say thank you. It will help us craft the legislative narrative about who we are as INSHE and what we hope to be and where we contribute to our state well-being. And therefore, here's why we need money, rather than give us all our money back, which is certainly a vision statement, but it isn't a very compelling one if you sit on the other side of that. And so I think going, as I have said to you so many times, with a narrative about looking forward and who we are and who we wish to be on behalf of the 100,000 students in our care and on behalf of the 3.2 million Nevadans whom we serve, super helpful for those of us who will be testifying. So I thank you for your guidance.
Thank you, Acting Chancellor Arquiaga. I will now move to new business. Is there any new business for this committee? Hearing none, I will move to public comment. Is there public comment in Reno?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
If I may?
Yes, of course.
And this is just a personal preference that I'm going to throw out there is I think acting or interim are just contract terms. I think Dale is our chair or chancellor, sorry, and we should just call him chancellor. And I don't like using acting or interim because they are just contract terms. He's running the system, and that's just my personal perspective. Thank you.
I appreciate your perspective, Regent Geddes. I mean no disrespect to our chancellor. I know that he is he knows his job, and I think he understands my point in that. So, but I do appreciate that, and I will leave off acting. So, thank you. Public comment in Reno?
None.
Thank you. Public comment in Elko?
None at this point.
Thank you. Is there any public comment in Las Vegas? Seeing none, I will adjourn this meeting at 12:07. And before we sign off, there are boxed lunches in the room to my left over here. Please help yourself. Thank you.